How are marketing agencies adapting to a marketplace awash with engineering-centric emerging technologies? For Tiny Giant, a small, new marketing agency based in Bristol, England, AI and other emerging technologies are at the very heart of their business model. To talk about Tiny Giant, marketing agencies, and emerging tech, we are pleased to welcome Carrie Harrison to the show. She is a co-founder of Tiny Giant and a marketing creative with almost 20 years of experience. My name is Dirk Niemeyer, a social futurist interested in systems that will make the quality of our lives better. My partner is Jonathan Follett, a writer, composer, and emerging tech researcher. Welcome to Season 2, Episode 10 of Creative Next, a show about future-proofing creatives in a world of AI automation. Let's get started. Agencies often play a role as innovators. My first job out of grad school was with an ad agency. I remember, in the year 2000, we made a high-definition television commercial for a university. It was, to the best of our knowledge, the first HD spot that was run in movie theaters as an ad before the movie, at least in our region of the United States. It was one of the first projects that I worked on, and I remember it well. The fact we were shooting in HD was a huge selling point with the client. Compared to traditional video, not only would it enable commercials at the movie theater, it would allow still images to be taken from the video footage, which could affordably be used to create brand integration across messaging and the campaign. Two, it had a wider aspect ratio than TV at the time, so the ad would be on television screens in a letterbox format, a visual cue that this was a more sophisticated, higher production quality spot. Then, too, on the client side, the executive who bought our services was earning big points with the university president for the innovation he was bringing to the school's marketing. The novelty and progressive nature of shooting in HD was a reputation chip he was able to play. There was no way almost any university could, internally, do such a thing. This work was enabled by their working with an agency. Now, here we are, 20 years later. In 2000, the state of the art was an HD video spot and a better website. Today, the landscape is far more complex. So many innovative technologies, and the litany of applications they enable, are cresting. Whereas moving from traditional to HD video was largely just a matter of an expensive new camera in 2000, used by the same grizzled camera person who had been doing that kind of work already for perhaps decades, today's technologies are the product of complex engineering. It was relatively easy for me then, as a green and ambitious young creative, to clearly understand what was going on and systematically facilitate the creation of what would prove not just innovative, but award-winning marketing. Today, that would be far harder and infinitely more interesting. To explore the relationship between marketing agencies and emerging technology, we welcome Carrie Harrison to Creative Next. Carrie is a co-founder of Tiny Giant, a UK-based marketing agency that positions itself as a band of creatives and computer scientists who combine bold ideas with smart technology to deliver marketing that moves people. Let's hear more about what they are trying to do.
One of the reasons we started was because we just believe that modern advertising is generally quite bland and derivative and largely ineffective. And so much of it looks the same and so much of it feels a bit like wallpaper. So we really wanted to tackle that problem. And we fundamentally believe that great ideas and harnessing these new channels can really jolt people out of their daily routine and make them think a little bit differently. So we both love technology, and it's such an exciting time right now in terms of the development of AI, and there's so many new and emerging technologies. We feel that combination of really great ideas, so human ideas and creativity, and combining that with technology can help brands deliver something that's really different and help something that will really move people emotionally. Whether your advertising or marketing promotes joy, or whether it pulls at the heartstrings, or whether it surprises people, or even if it enrages them, it just needs to make people feel something. And then I think if you don't feel anything, you don't do anything. That's our vision, really, is, I suppose, to help brands deliver the most relevant, personalized, and moving marketing, and just to bring a bit more joy and a bit more surprise back into advertising and marketing.
Using emerging technology to move people seems like a perfectly sensible business model. how does Tiny Giant apply that? One of the ways is with chatbots, a technology we heard a lot about from Andy Morrow last episode. Let's extend that with Carrie.
So yeah, we love chatbots. It's interesting because there's been so much said about them. I think a few years ago, they were very much the next big thing. And then there was a lot of headlines about, oh, chatbots are dead. But we still feel they're very much just starting out. And recently, Gartner predicted that 25% of customer service and support operations, for example, will use some form of chatbot technology by 2020, which was up from 2% in 2017. So it does feel like it's definitely on the up. I think how chatbots can help, there's a multitude of ways. They're a great way of creating one-to-one communications at scale. So at the moment, messaging is the most frequent digital activity that any person does. So 72 trillion messages were sent in 2018 compared to 1.6 trillion searches on Google. So people are using WhatsApp, they're using Facebook Messenger, and that's the way that people are talking. We've kind of moved away a little bit more from the social media side of communication. We're very much focusing on this one-to-one communication. And because of that, I think a lot of people are also expecting instant replies. Because of AI, we can see how people are responding to content that you send out, and you can then hit them with more of that content going forward. So you know that what people like and what they don't like and what they're reading. So you can serve them content that suits them much better. And when you join a chatbot, say you're joining something that's like an online publisher of some sort, you can tell them what your likes and dislikes are so that they can make the content that they send perfectly right for you. And one chatbot that we saw recently, I think it was probably done last year, was done by National Geographic. And they were doing a new series called the Genius Series. And they were exploring a range of genius people over the years. So everyone from Pablo Picasso right down to Albert Einstein. And they created this brilliant Einstein chatbot where you could have a chat with Einstein about all sorts of things. And it was really beautifully written. And we just really liked that. So it was an extra way for you to engage with the Genius program.
This Genius series is a concrete example of how this technology can be applied in specific domains to really bring a topic to life. Carrie uses the words conversational designer. Let's get into her thinking a little bit about designing for voice.
Our offering in voice is similar to chat in that we're designing really great conversational experiences. So for voice, it's a little bit different because you often don't have the visual element that you have with the chatbots. With the chatbot, you can present little maps or visuals or GIFs or things like that. With a voice, you don't, although that is changing with some of the new voice assistants now that you can get with them with a screen. Conversation design is an intricate process, but the way you design is really important. It's going to influence whether someone returns to your voice skill. It can be the difference with having a really positive brand experience or having a really negative one. So if it's done badly, it could actually have a detrimental impact on your brand. So thinking about the way that it's designed and the conversation design is really, really important. I think one of the first things to consider is the fact that your voice experiences have to be consistent with your brand. So that's from a tone of voice point of view. There's no point in sounding really chatty and conversational on your website, for example, and then going onto the smart speaker and you sound really stiff and overly formal. It would just feel really out of kilter with everything else that you're offering. So at the very beginning, you need to consider how you're going to speak and what you want to be to your customers. But it's not just about personality, it's also about the way you write. So you need to think about the way that things sound out loud. So it's completely different writing for voice as it is writing for text, because you need to have a bit of personality. You might have some nice little turn of phrases. You also need to think about the rhythm as well and how it actually sounds when it comes out, because sometimes you write something down and think, oh, that sounds really nice. And then you read it out loud and go, oh no, that sounds really unnatural. So I think you do have to really think about the rhythm. And this kind of variation adds a lot of depth to the conversation, but I think it also helps to minimize the idea that you're talking to a machine, which is quite important. And I think people now are kind of a bit more comfortable with talking to machines. I think the home speakers are very much more integrated into our daily lives now, and we don't really think about it. But I think if the rhythm is off and if your conversation feels unnatural, then that the idea that you're speaking to a machine becomes a lot more obvious. And in a way, you don't want that to happen. You want people to sort of get into the conversation and to feel as natural as possible. So that's that side of it. But we also want to make the experience really stress-free. So we talked about it being a joy to talk to. Just really small things like avoiding repetition. So for example, if you're using confirmations, if you want, if say if you just ordered a coffee, rather than just saying, do you confirm X? Do you confirm Y? Do you confirm Z? It would just be incredibly boring. So we just try and have a little think about it. So we might say, do you confirm one time, but then say, is this right? Or shall I go ahead? Or so just being really conscious of it. Because when we talk with our friends, we don't really repeat ourselves over and over again. Otherwise, it would just be a little bit weird and a little bit dull. So we do think about that kind of thing. And also priming people to give you the right answer. So for example, if you were ordering a ticket, rather than just saying, when would you like to travel? You need to say, what date would you like to travel? And just make sure that the answers are coming back to you in the right format so that they are processed quickly and efficiently. And so that the customer then has a really positive and smooth experience with your device.
That's a useful primer for someone engaging in this work and gives the rest of us the sense of what the design considerations for this sort of work entail. Let's hear more about why Carrie thinks these are valuable tactics compared to more traditional marketing, including a bunch of interesting examples.
It's actually the fastest growing piece of tech since the smartphone. It took the smartphone 3 years to reach 50 million users, and it took smart speakers 2.5 years. So it's absolutely phenomenal how quickly it's been adopted. And I think that's an indication that how people are finding it so helpful and really engaging. I think one of the things that make voice so strong and why people are thinking of investing in it really is because it's so simple, it's so natural, and it's completely frictionless. It's absolutely brilliant for storytelling. So, for example, Jurassic World did a voice app a couple of years ago, I think it might have been last year actually, for their Jurassic World new film, which allowed users to interact with stories as part of the promotion of that film. So you could go and visit one of the islands and explore the islands, and you can follow this story, and they would say, would you want to go here? Would you want to go there? And you would decide the outcome of that story. So it's quite nice. It's quite immersive. And people love storytelling. So it's a really good way of doing that. And it's also really good for content delivery. So Financial Times have recently done a really beautiful voice app alongside Google. And they've created a voice experience called Hidden Cities, where you can go on virtual tour of a city. So you go and find out about the club scene in Berlin, for example. And then you could go through and talk to a nightclub owner and what it was like to stand in the queue. And you could find out about what the buildings were like, what the club buildings were like, and how they transferred and turned warehouses into clubs. But it was all beautiful journalism. It's all content that exists with the Financial Times, but they've actually put it into a voice context and made it into this really immersive storytelling experience, which I thought was really lovely. And I think Domino's Pizza have done this really, really well in that they've introduced an Alexa skill where literally you say 6 words. You could be watching the football. You could literally just say, Alexa, ask Domino's to feed me, and your pizza, your favorite pizza, will literally be delivered. I mean, like, you can't get many more experiences that are that frictionless and that easy and have your pizza there. There's nothing you have to open. There's no app you have to download. It's literally just you talk and the pizza comes. There's also supermarket called Ocado. I'm not sure if you have that in America, but they've created a skill where you can literally add to your shopping list while you're cooking. So you realize you've run out of garlic, you just say, Alexa, add this to my Ocado shopping list, and it will be delivered with your next order. So I think the investment will be about having something to add to your campaign to create an additional experience alongside something else that you're doing in your marketing mix, but also to create really simple, frictionless experiences and make it really easy for people to order or buy or get the service that they need.
Experimentation is a big part of the learning at Tiny Giant. With the media hype around AI, they wanted to better understand what was going on and how it could benefit their clients. So they jumped in and did it for themselves.
It's a bit more about personal experimentation. So we just really want to explore what's creatively possible with AI. I think there's been a lot of headlines lately about AI either taking creative jobs or potentially destroying creativity completely. And we just wanted to, I suppose, prove or disprove those headlines. But we just wanted to see what AI could do and whether we could use it as a jump-off point or as a starting point to augment our creativity process. It's gained quite a lot of traction for us, especially in the event space. So we've created a curator, which I'll talk about later, but we've also created some AI conceived cocktails, which we're going to be serving at an event in London. So it kind of started off really with neural networks because it felt like that was a good place for us to start. And we've created cocktails and cupcakes, first of all. So with the cupcakes, this involved taking hundreds and hundreds of cake recipes, training a neural network, which then eventually was able to generate its own recipes. So it learned from everything we'd input and then was able to generate recipes of its own. And what we thought at that point was, rather than just going, oh, those are cool recipes, they're really weird and wonderful and interesting, what we really wanted to do is add a human being to the mix and say, okay, so we've got this generated content, they're really creative and interesting, but let's actually make them and see what the human can bring to this experience. And so we teamed up with a cupcake expert. All she does is make cupcakes, and so she was amazing. So we gave her our recipes and she said, well, if you do this and this, then this one will taste amazing. So for example, one of the recipes that came out was a Guinness vanilla and marmalade flavor, which sounds really bonkers, but she said if you put the vanilla and the Guinness into the cake and then use the marmalade as sort of the main basis of the icing, that will taste amazing. And she was right about that, which was really, really good. And we did the same with the AI cocktails. So this involved putting in hundreds and hundreds of cocktail recipes. So we searched the internet for traditional cocktail recipes and we used books and put those all in, trained a neural network, and then eventually it was able to generate its own cocktail recipes. And once again, we took this to a human mixologist and we said, we've created these crazy cocktail recipes. What can you do with them? It was interesting with the cocktail recipes because I suppose with the cake, we took out some of the basic ingredients. So all cakes going to need flour and butter and sugar and eggs to actually work. So we took those out of the recipes and then just used it more for sort of flavors. Whereas with the cocktails, there's nothing fundamental about a cocktail. We had to start from scratch with that one. So some of the recipes that came out were incredibly potent, and the neural network didn't always understand that you might want a mixer in with your cocktails. It might so some of the recipes that we went to the mixologist with, he was like, wow, these are going to be really strong, but he made them work really well. So he dialed up and dialed down different aspects of the recipes that were generated to make them taste really delicious. I think one of the ones that was really interesting was a cocktail which involved courgette, champagne, and sour cherry. And the courgette, he was saying, we can't really just grate courgette and put that in, because it's just not going to taste very good. So he then brought his experience as a mixologist and he made this really amazing like courgette tincture with it, which is like quite syrupy and really delicious, and then made that part of the recipe. So I think that's what we were really excited about, is that sort of combination of human and using AI as a starting point to really explore what's possible creatively.
Before Carrie and I talked, when I read about the cupcake and cocktail projects, I was skeptical. It felt like a fancy random number generator applied to edibles. But in the context of Tiny Giant doing hands-on learning to understand AI technologies, of their creating something that is more of an attention getter as opposed to what might someday be an actual AI mixologist, it's pretty cool. In fact, recently they've done a more advanced project on the work of Sylvia Plath, as well as an AI curator for the Cheltenham Science Festival dedicated to the innovator Ada Lovelace. It gives you a sense of the breadth and the marketing applications. Carrie's been in the marketing game a long time, having participated in and helped to lead a variety of large changes. How does she see marketing agencies evolving in the years ahead?
There's been a lot said recently about the death of advertising agencies, but I still feel there's very much a place for agencies. They just probably will just need to evolve. Ad agencies will still be needed to come up with big ideas to keep clients abreast of the latest technology and the best ways to harness the technologies and platforms available to them. I just think they'll probably need to change tack slightly. So as technologies emerge and there's new and exciting ways to reach and engage customers, it's going to be increasingly difficult for one agency to do it all. So I think collaboration is going to be key. Big agencies are already buying up smaller, more specialized agencies. And others, I know there's a few that have set up recently, even where we are, they have a project management and strategy team who are working there all the time, but then they call in relevant creative teams depending on the job at hand. And I think that will become much more of a model, because you can't have everyone with all these different experiences sat under one roof all the time. It would be incredibly expensive, and people might not need those specific skills at one point, but they might need them later on. And so it would make the agency feel very hefty, very expensive, huge overheads. So I feel that people will need to work in more specialized teams, that people need to collaborate with other agencies and specialist teams. I'd also think, and this is already happening, that brands are much more likely to adopt a sprint approach now rather than a sort of marathon approach. There's going to be smaller teams working on specialized projects in shorter time frames. I think that will become more of a model, and you can already see that starting to happen now.
The death of the agency is like a weed. The idea keeps popping up, yet also keeps getting pulled out. The reality is that companies will always need some outside creative and strategic force, one that is not working in the immersion and rhythm of their company, but instead at the forefront of broader global trends and tremors, to engage for a different type and caliber of work. Only time will tell, though, if it is larger super agencies, or smaller specialized boutiques, or a vibrant ecosystem of both that make up the future agency landscape. Speaking of future, what future impacts does Kerry envision from AI and other emerging technologies?
In terms of AI, I think it's going to change a huge amount about marketing, and it already is, really. It's going to help us deliver much more personalized campaigns at scale, and this is going to continue. So using data to hit people at the right time with the right messaging, knowing what they like and what they don't like. AIs will help dictate when to begin and end campaigns, even the mix of content we create, and also even the type of imagery we're using. And we'll also see AI begin to automate the timing and delivering of messaging. But technologies such as like AI will also give us a new ability to measure as well. So with the development of technology like facial recognition and biometrics, I think we'll be able to see how people feel as they experience a campaign and therefore respond to that accordingly. In a similar way to that, with voice technology, I think we'll be able to gauge by tone and measure emotion around particular experiences. So, for example, I know that it was quite recently that Amazon filed a patent for a piece of technology which would analyze your voice and see how you felt. So, for example, it would know if you were tired, or it would know if you were depressed or stressed, and it would offer tips and tricks and advice. Potentially, if you have a cold, for example, it would know that you had a cold from the way that your voice was. And then it would ask you if you wanted to order some cough sweets, all delivered through Amazon, of course. So you could see how that kind of is going to come into marketing as well, because we'll just know a lot more, we'll be able to analyze people a lot more. Marketers are still going to need a way to stand out or hit a headline. So with AI, marketers have much more time, or have much more time to experiment with new mediums and new experiences, and they'll need to be a little bit more creative. I mean, advertising really works well, not only when an ad is relevant to an individual, which is very much data-driven, but also when great creatives help to make an emotional connection. So I think those two, and AI is brilliant at that because it can help us with all the data-driven stuff to make it much more relevant and inspiring for the end user, but it will also free up a bit more time for us to be creative by taking some of the heavier load from us. We'll have much more time to think strategically. I'd also say that we need to start valuing creative a little bit more. So again, as I said, with programmatic being much more of a focus, I think it will be good for us to concentrate more on the strategy and the creative side, so we can really hit people from an emotional point of view.
The emotional point of view. So much of this boils down to understanding a person, just that one person that is right in front of you, and delivering them what they need, when they need it, in the way they need it. To finish up, what sort of skills and jobs does Kerry see as being most important in the future?
We'll also need to be adaptable and be willing to evolve as technologies move and change. Because again, if you can't evolve with the technologies, it's very easy to get left behind. I've already talked about how, I suppose, as a copywriter, I've evolved from starting out in TV and press right through to, you know, social media and digital. And that's going to be the same, and probably even at a quicker rate than we've had in the past, that new technologies are going to emerge and AI is going to make new things possible. So I think from a skill point of view, that whether you a specialist or whether you've got a broader range of knowledge, you're still going to have to be able to adapt relatively quickly. I also think in terms of skills that ethics and social scientists are going to become really important. I think it's important for agencies and businesses to have ethicists as part of their business, people who really understand the impact of AI and what AI is doing and how it's going to change society. So rather than just making things in isolation, you really need to think of what impact that's going to have on people. I know when DeepMind was sold to Google, for example, a third of their staff were ethicists, and the tech giants like Google have already got ethicists and social science very much embedded into their team. So I would say that is something that people will need to have an element of a skill that's going to be perhaps incorporated more into marketing. So we would have marketing teams and creatives working alongside ethicists so that they can really consider the impact of AI. I'd also like to think that creativity will become more of an important skill. The World Economic Forum said that they listed 10 skills which they believe would be fundamentally important to businesses in 2020, and creativity came in at number 3 after complex problem solving and critical thinking. And in the same way, a recent LinkedIn report actually reported that creativity was the number 1 soft skill required by employers. So I feel like creativity is another skill that will need to be considered and developed. I don't know if you've ever seen the Ken Robinson talk on a TED talk, which is called Do Schools Kill Creativity? It's really worth a watch, but I feel that creativity still needs to have a bit more value, especially in schools and moving forward, especially because it's now regarded by, you know, the World Economic Forum and a lot of employers as being a really fundamental skill going forward. And as I said before, as programmatic becomes more commonplace and data-led marketing becomes a norm, creativity is what's going to make marketing really unique and interesting. And new approaches are going to have to be thought about, and people will need to be engaged in different ways. So creativity is going to be a really important part of that. And outside of marketing, of course, creative thinking skills are going to be needed to provide innovative solutions to some of the world's biggest problems. I think we are facing quite a few fundamental big problems in our world right now. And if people haven't got creativity and aren't motivated by innovation, then those problems are going to be pretty tricky to solve. If AI can do the heavy lifting or start a process, we can then apply our human creativity and wonderful skills that we have to greater effect. So together with AI, I really think we can innovate and solve problems and hopefully make the world a better place.
Thanks again to our guest, Carrie Harrison. So, John, how did our interview with Carrie impact your thinking about the work we are doing with Creative Next?
So I think the work that Carrie's doing with Tiny Giant is really at the heart of creative leverage when it comes to, production using artificial intelligence. So I think it's really fascinating, her approach, this idea that their team at Tiny Giant wants to jolt people out of their seats, right? They want them to get out of their daily routine and see something new and have this emotional response, right? So that's a very creative, quote, creative way of describing why you're using the technology. Mm-hmm. And I think it really speaks to how creative workers in the future are going to look at AI as a tool to do something, right? We're technologists, we're creative people, you and I, but we're also technologists and we look at things from a technical perspective a lot. You know, it was nice to hear what I see as more sort of a pure creative executive take on why you would be using AI versus, you know, hey, there's all these cool tools. Like, I am always looking at it from the tools standpoint, like, hey, how can I make this go faster? Or how can I make this happen more efficiently? Or how can I incorporate this in this way into our technical stack, right? So that's how I'm thinking about it. Maybe that's the nascent engineer in me. Whereas using it to create something unique, something that people haven't seen before, that is how creative workers are going to use that in the future. And that's the way she was talking about it.
Yeah. Carrie had a lot of case studies about these technologies out in the wild that I, for one, was not familiar with. Ever since Creative Next became a civil newsroom, I've made it standard practice to follow up on claims that guests make, so that I can post a comment or otherwise include a factual correction for our listeners. Now, Carrie's case studies were all true and correct, but researching them, the realities in some ways I thought were less impressive than the headline. And to be clear, that's nothing that Carrie did wrong in any way, but just the state of these nascent technologies. And so, for example, I thought the Domino's Alexa skill about 6-word ordering was pretty cool. It was pretty amazing. However, on Amazon, it only has a 3.1 rating. And reading the comments, you can see that it's more of a niche thing. It's not really a product ready for prime time yet. Because, of course, you don't want to always order the exact same thing in the same way. And what if you have a coupon? And what if you're ordering from another location? And, right? There's so many different factors that make this six-word soundbite not really the right thing. So it's this weird sort of one-trick pony at the moment. I mean, what it does is still miraculous in a certain way, but in another, it's pretty gimped. So coming back to the work with Creative Next, it's really a reminder to look at everything in a skeptical way, because the amazing headlines often don't capture the full reality of the experience.
The products from Amazon, they do a lot of that kind of testing, right? Where it's almost there,
yeah.
and they're rolling it out to see if it'll get traction or not. In this case, that would be, it would also be frustrating if your kids just started, you know, yelling the command and suddenly all these pizzas started showing up.
So what did Carrie say that was the biggest surprise or new kernel of knowledge for you?
So I was really surprised by and really enjoyed her discussion around the neural network putting together recipes for cocktails and cupcakes.
Mm.
I thought that was an excellent way of demonstrating how you could have an AI assistant in a professional setting that would really create something of use to, you know, someone who has the experience and someone who's practicing, you know, whether they're a baker or a bartender, and they are looking for what amounts to, you know, a research assistant, someone who's going to bring them the materials of new ideas, but to leave the sort of ideation and executive portion of the creative process to them, right? So in this AI that they that Tiny Giant created, I saw the rudiments of these assistive technologies that really enhanced, you know, the creative opportunities for, you know, for professional practicing. And that excited me because that's nothing that I would have ever, you know, sort of imagined for, you know, you wouldn't think, oh, you know, a bartender is going to be having an AI that's going to inspire them to create, you know, the drink menu for the night. But, you know, that takes a lot of effort. You know, maybe that cuts out a couple hours for them. They can spend that time, you know, on something else. So I thought that was a really interesting way of introducing AI into some very sort of practical scenarios and adding a bit of interest to what otherwise you may not, you know, have the time to come up with new drink recipes or new baking recipes. But now all of a sudden you can have something new every week. That's kind of cool.
Yeah, and this isn't an example that they actually had, but you would need to be aware to make sure that the mustard and the raspberry never get combined, for example.
Yeah, right.
I was surprised to learn how quickly smart speakers are being adopted. I remember when I got my first smartphone, I loved it. There was no going back. Yet with smart speakers, as I've mentioned many times on the show at this point, I find the current technology to really be a failure. My Alexa continues to sit collecting dust. I'll give you an update when that changes, if it ever changes. So while the adoption might have been rapid, I wonder if the unevenness of the technology will actually result in slowing rather than accelerating adoption of the underlying app ecosystem. Maybe so many people kind of getting into smart speakers early will slow things longer term because they just aren't that great.
Yeah, that's an interesting premise. It's hard to know how that's all going to play out. I mean, when you think about the phone, right, how the smartphone got adopted into sort of larger usage, the initial smartphones just had some miraculous kind of technologies on them. And I remember, I think maybe it was the second generation iPhone, but the one that had GPS on it really changed my life.
Yeah.
In a number of ways. To start with, you didn't have to get a separate GPS system for your car, which, you know, it's delightful for me. I can never find my way around Boston. So now with the smart speaker, you're kind of looking for that you know, amazing
yes.
experience that's going to draw you in and say, how can I live without this thing? And right now it's really just a speaker with a wonky voice interface. And so to your question as to whether people are going to care about it and whether that will speed growth, I think they've created growth out of something else other than, you know, people, you know, fundamentally being interested in the voice UI. Mm-hmm. And so whether or not that's going to affect the way things are adopted, I don't know. But it feels like, hey, we made it really cheap. It's novel. It's a good speaker. You know, I need a speaker, maybe not using the voice UI, right? There's a lot of reasons to have one of these. Mm-hmm. But in terms of adopting chatbot technology into your daily life, it ain't there yet, and it's really more of a novelty at this point.
Yeah, amen to that. So what did you learn from Carrie that has influenced your life and how you're living today?
So I was taken by her example from the National Geographic team that made the Genius series, this application of AI in an educational fashion. It made me think that I would like to experiment with using AI chat for something that we're doing at the studio. It made it seem like the applications weren't out, you know, particularly out of reach, but that it was something that could be implemented and become part of whatever sort of everyday project that you had in front of you. So for me, inspired me to, you know, look further into how, you know, an AI chatbot might be used in our design practice. And to be fair, we've implemented a number of them, but the designers in the studio have done that. I'm talking about me personally.
Sure, sure. Yeah, I'm inspired by the can-do attitude of Tiny Giant. I mean, they're a super boutique shop, but they make relationships and partnerships, and they just jump into emerging technologies with both feet. It's cool that they've programmed a neural network and made some rudimentary AI. And they're looking for the next emerging tech to jump right into as well. It's the classic, as I look at them, if they can do it, why can't I? And, you know, frankly, listeners for that matter, why can't you, right? So each episode we finish up with a thing to think about, one question germane to what's been covered on the show today. This episode's thing to think about is, what emerging tech are you most interested to learn more about, and what sort of experiment can you dream up to try and learn by making? Think about that for yourself, and feel free to tweet at us about it, at GoCreativeNext. Creative Next is a proud member of Civil, a community-owned platform for independent journalism. Learn more at civil.co, that's civil.co. We are sponsored by GoInvo, a design practice dedicated to innovation in healthcare, whose clients are as varied as AstraZeneca, 3M Health Information Services, and the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. Learn more at goinvo.com. We're also sponsored by Design Museum Foundation, a new kind of museum. They believe design can change the world. They're online, nomadic, and focused on making design accessible to everyone. Their mission, bring the transformative power of design everywhere. You can learn about their exhibitions, events, magazine, and more at designmuseumfoundation.org. Our final sponsor is BIF. As a purpose-driven firm, BIF is committed to bringing design strategy where it is needed most, healthcare, education, and public service, to create value for our most vulnerable populations. To learn more and connect, visit them at BIF.is, that's BIF.is. Please subscribe to Creative Next on Apple Podcasts. You can also find us at Google Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you like to listen. You can get in touch with us at the Creative Next website, creativenext.org, or follow us on Twitter, at GoCreativeNext. On Medium, we are partnered with Towards Data Science, where we publish articles to extend and build upon these episodes. Check out all that Towards Data Science has to offer at towardsdatascience.com. I'm Dirk Niemeyer, whom you can reach at dniemeyer, and my partner in crime is Jonathan Follett, who is at John Follett. Thanks to our guest, Carrie Harrison, who is on Twitter, at copywritercarrie. Tweet to us with questions, comments, topics, guest suggestions, and include the hashtag CreativeNext. And the home base for everything we do is at creativenext.org. We recommend you sign up for our low-volume newsletter there. That's it for Creative Next Season 2, Episode 10. But here's a clip of what you can expect to hear next time. We'll see you then.
We need to also understand that we can only celebrate automation when we have strong safety nets and strong security systems that allow us to reimagine our ways of living.